It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and on the show today, loudmouths. Ideas about people who have a lot to say.
Hi. Thank you, everybody. Sorry, this is such a wonderful opportunity and everything to be here right now.
This is Sarah Jones.
Oh, my, there's so many of you. Hi, sweetheart. Okay.
That's actually also Sarah Jones.
Of, like, you guys, like, recording me, like a meta recording or whatever.
And that's Sarah Jones.
You know what I'm saying? I'm the only dude up here right now. Sarah Jones, maybe she didn't want me to.
You guessed it, Sarah Jones. Sarah is a Tony Award-winning actor, writer, and director. But she's most famous for performing a wide variety of different characters in her one-woman shows. Characters like Nereida, a Dominican-American woman from New York City.
I don't know if there's any other Dominican people here, but I know that Juan Enriquez, he was here yesterday, and I think he's Mexican, so that's honestly, that's close enough for me right now.
Or Bella, a white liberal arts student at Bay Area university.
Well, of course, like, I consider myself to be, like, obviously, like, a feminist. Like, I was named...
Sarah has made her career embodying dozens of characters of all different backgrounds, ethnicities, and social classes.
Oh, Sarah, I have spent so much time with your voice in my head for the last few days. It's so great to finally connect with you.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I started to apologize, but it sounds like it has not been an unpleasant experience for you, so that's good.
It's been a delight. I want to get into the specifics of your work, but I first want to ask you, do you remember when you realized, I don't know if it was as a child or when you were older, that you wanted to and that you could use your voice to embody other people?
When I was a little girl, I started experimenting with not sounding the way I looked or the obvious ways that people would think I must sound because of the way I looked. And so, yeah, it did start really early, mimicking, you know, folks from my real life, including my very real mixed race family. In fact, one of the characters who has now been with me forever is named Lorraine Levine. I just put my glasses on here so I can see. But Sarah bases all of the people, the characters, on people from her real life, and she has been doing it since she was a little tiny thing. And I think that she started doing it because she didn't know where she belonged in her family. There were black and white and Christians and Jews and Latinos or Hispanic. I don't know what the correct word is for anybody anymore, so just edit it so I don't get canceled. But anyway, she had all the different people surrounding her. Yes, Lorraine is right. I had a lot of people around me, and I think that was there from very early days.
What is your process for writing for these characters? When you decide to take on a topic, do you sit down and think, you know, what would they say? Or do you, maybe they all have a conversation with each other at your kitchen table? I don't know.
Oh, Manoush, have you been spying on me? We have the occasional summit, but I think there are some folks whose ideas are very central to kind of, you know, the larger mainstream culture. And then there are the stories that have historically not been so central to our ideas of whose voices are important and who, you know, whose narratives do we pay attention to. And so I started performing in New York with characters like,
my name is Miss Lady, and you can't see me, so you don't know that I have not been to the dentist for a while, unfortunately, because I live on the street, and Sarah Jones was in college, and she would see me on the subway, and she started to ask, she asked me some questions, you know how obnoxious those young kids can be. She started to think, what if this lady, who nobody pays no attention to and don't think anything she had to say could possibly be important, what if people on Broadway came and paid their money to listen to an unhoused lady talk about her reality and her history and her past?
So that was interesting for me, was the idea of kind of shifting our focus as audience members to, you know, the stories that don't usually make their way into the starring position.
Sarah's most recent play is called Sell By Date, to
to be clear, that sell slash buy slash date. And a warning to our listeners, we will be talking about some adult themes. Because this play, which debuted in 2016, featured Sarah's characters sharing a wide range of perspectives on sex work. Sarah wrote the play after years of research, traveling the world, and gathering stories about this complicated subject.
You know, even as you're saying it now, when you get to the part about sex work, I kind of cringe a little bit and go, oh no. But I guess that's why I did it. It's a topic, you know, my little way of framing it was that we sort of call it the oldest profession, but it's really the oldest conversation that no one is having in a thoughtful way. And so I wondered, is there a way to ask, why do we stigmatize and slut shame and have all the, you know, kind of notions, preconceived notions that we do? Mm. And who should feel ashamed and why?
And before I knew it, he was the one that turned me on to the prostitution, my own husband. Yeah, he had me supporting the both of us. I was 18.
You know, when I first came to this country, I worked every job I can find. I was a nanny. I was a home care attendant for all of these different old people. And then I said, child, if I have to touch another white man backside, I might as well get paid a lot more money for it than this. You understand?
Like, I support other women's right to choose it voluntarily, like, if they enjoy it.
My opinion of the legalization, I'd say I'm against it. I don't care what these young girls say. You know, living like that, you're just lost.
I'm not going to tell you that what I do, it's easy. I'm not going to tell you that I feel, what's that you said, liberated? But I'm going to tell you that I feel paid.
I really didn't want to say to people, this is what you have to think. I wanted to say, here's an array of stories that I hope represents lots of different viewpoints. But the core underpinning is, these are human beings who deserve access to all the choices in the world and all the self-determination in the world. So I think that was the goal, was to just sort of unpack as much as I could while admitting that I don't have, you know, kind of a perfect solution. I'm certainly not the judge or jury, and I definitely don't want to be the executioner. And I think as a society, we have been.
Your play was a total hit with audiences and critics. And then 5 years later, there were plans to turn it into a movie, and you had support from stars like Meryl Streep. But what happened?
Judges, juries, and executioners abound.
The film was backed by a team of A-list Hollywood producers, and so suddenly this was a much bigger platform.
Here's Sarah Jones on the TED stage.
And people who did not know me assumed I was a cultural appropriator with bad intentions. And suddenly, I was under brutal attack. I mean, strangers from all over the internet were coming for me personally, threatening my funders, promising to cancel anyone associated with my film. Why? Well, these cancelers were actually concerned sex workers. They were afraid my film would be disrespectful to the already very marginalized people in the sex industry. And I get that. But before I could even make the film and include the voices of sex workers, as I had always planned, they said I had no right to tell my story since I'm not in the industry myself. And they were more than willing to destroy me and my career.
What were they saying? Like, what was their problem with you? Or what did they say their problem was with you?
Yeah, I think the very understandable problem is that they were afraid that it was just going to be another dismissive, you know, disrespectful kind of ignoring of the main people in the main conversation. But I guess my thought was, couldn't you have waited to cancel me until you actually saw the movie? Couldn't you have waited for me to, like, express my ideas before deciding you should shut me down?
The backlash was swift and severe. People called Sarah a danger to women, said she was making the stigma against sex workers even worse. Some of Sarah's collaborators walked away from the project. She says it was one of the most painful moments of her life.
It was just this excruciating mix of, wait a minute, you're getting it wrong. You don't know what you're, why are you attacking? But it's all happening too fast to be able to even defend yourself. I've never experienced anything like it.
But in the end, she decided to make the movie about the controversy itself.
Sarah, you know sex work is just another way of saying exploitation.
OM goddess, Sarah will totally be taking a stand that sex work is real work. And this movie will tell the world.
You're both wrong. The real problem is Sarah doesn't know what she really believes.
She also interviewed her critics, who explained why they were so angry, why they felt it was wrong for her to depict them on camera.
I get why all those girls kind of got on you, and the real thing is you are an outsider. You're what we call a civilian. You do not understand what it is we go through to be telling our stories. So are you open to actually learning? I can show you where people have messed up.
Okay.
So you did make the movie, but boy, is it different than the play. You basically turned the camera around on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I decided that some people said, just let it blow over, hide it. And, you know, like I had publicists say, this will, you know, die off if you just let it die off. And I thought, but it harmed me. It harmed my collaborators. It harmed, you know, the people who I was hoping to actually involve in the conversation. So why not actually tell the truth about that? Mm-hmm. You know, I think so many people are afraid of getting it wrong, of, you know, doing their best and still having it fall short and then being, you know, kind of publicly shamed. And, you know, in this case, I thought, this is going to hurt probably a lot, but I can at least try to bring the people who are criticizing me and judging me into this process with me, turn the cameras on and see what happens. And we basically, you know, I call it an unorthodox because it's a documentary, but it's very much also a hybrid narrative, unorthodox way of approaching, you know, how to tell this real story that was unfolding in real time.
One of the chief criticisms of you was that since you were not in the sex industry yourself, you were an outsider and therefore not qualified to speak on behalf of people who are in that industry.
Yeah.
But throughout the film, we start to learn that it was more complicated than that, that you spend the film carrying your sister's diary. And we learn that she died at age 18 from an overdose. And you also mention that she was in a bad relationship with an older man. And you did have a personal perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my own personal relationship to, you know, the idea of what is sexual exploitation? What constitutes, you know, a woman just making choices for herself? This dynamic has always been there. And I've seen it in my own life, including in my family's life and in my kind of community. And I'm grateful that I did get the full participation of, you know, key family members to make sure that I wasn't harming anyone when I made my film. I realized if I can tell my own personal story, maybe that will lift a little bit of the sense of shame or these aren't things that happen to people. These are emphatically things that are happening to people and they're intertwined with all the other values that we claim to care about.
But I was like, Sarah Jones, why didn't you tell your critics earlier that you did have a connection to sex work? Would that not have legitimized you in their eyes if they knew you were speaking as someone with, you know, lived experience, so to speak, as well?
I think once we go down that kind of path of here are all my credentials, here are my receipts, here's my 23andMe, I promise you I am, you know, I deal with it even in the context of my work, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell everybody what percentage Jewish am I so that I don't get in trouble for portraying Lorraine. What percentage, you know, Latinx, what's my proximity to all of these backgrounds that I portray so that I quote unquote can't get into trouble. I think we're in dangerous territory when we ignore the reality that there can't be these, you know, kind of tests for who has the right to tell whose stories unless we're first looking at the stark reality that there are these power dynamics that do make a difference. And I do portray white men. And it's different for me to portray a white guy than it is for a white guy to portray a black woman.
Right.
And if people don't understand that, then that's a great conversation for us to get to have, which I am having now with audiences more and more. So there's a lot of kind of complexity here that I don't think is as much about saying who's allowed to do what, but more, what is the intention? What is the real context for people wanting to do the work that they're doing? And how can we make sure that we're addressing simultaneously all the very, very real social justice issues, just like with the folks in the sex industry? I don't disagree with them that they deserve, you know, justice and a voice that has been denied them. And it's appalling.
Mm. So our conversation right now is part of an episode that we're calling Loudmouths. I've talked to Lily Singh and one of the members of Pussy Riot. And the idea is talking to women who've made a name for themselves by being outspoken, but then run into trouble because of it. I wonder what you think of that term, loudmouth. Have you been called it in the past?
Oh, I'm sure. Maybe not to my face, but, you know, I think maintaining the status quo, going along to get along, that hasn't served women very well. And we have to be noisy, especially for some of us and for women of color often, even though I know there are people out there who think we're running the universe right now. I promise you we're not. You know, you're just seeing our faces a lot, but it doesn't actually translate into power. And so the fact that we have to work three times as hard to get one third as far, it does force you to speak up and be squeaky and be loud and to, you know, accept that, at least for me, the audience that finds me, that loves my work, I don't want to do them a disservice by dumbing down or watering it down or being quiet.
That's Sarah Jones, actor, writer, and director. You can see all of her talks at TED.com.